Well, Jason, let's talk a little bit about you. Tell me, you work at a futon. You're the manager of three futon stores, correct?
Not now. I haven't been there very much. I'm really just helping out when I have to.
Okay, I guess you've taken on a new role. Talk a little bit about what you're doing now.
What I'm doing is just basically lecturing, and we're trying to get just a few things into the curriculum. One of my goals is to get pie the way that I draw it and the way that I describe it into the curriculum, because it's really easy for everybody to understand in this geometric way and in layman terms, and it teaches so much in a sneaky way. Just that one little drawing of pi, what it's describing, at least geometrically, is integral calculus, which is like taking the areas under a curve, how you approach taking the area fully but never actually reach it. And pi is doing the same thing. As you draw more and more triangles or squares within a circle, you're filling its area in closer and closer forever, but you never reach it. And the way that the edges of pi change is basically a secant approaching a tangent line, which is differential calculus. And then also the way that the circumference of a circle gets longer in pi. As you draw more sides to a circle, the circumference gets longer, but the diameter stays the same. And that's the yardstick problem in fractals, which is if you try to measure the coastline of a country, the smaller the yardstick that you use, the longer the circumference gets, because you can get into all those little nooks and crannies. Like if you're using a meter stick, but there's a little tiny curve in the coastline that's only 6 inches, you can't get in there and measure that curve without using a smaller yardstick. And you can keep doing this to infinity. And so by teaching them how pi works, the other huge thing that pi does is it literally defines all slope, all angles. And so you're teaching them where all angles come from, which is what math is. Everything comes down to slope. You're teaching them the concept of integral calculus and differential calculus and fractals in a sneaky way, so that when you hit these classes later on and you start getting hit with these big ideas at the same time trying to understand these new equations and the way that it's written, it's very hard to absorb it all at once. But when they have the concept already in their mind, then when they hit the classes, it makes it a lot easier, because they'll see, it's like taking the area under a curve, and they'll remember back to, that's the same problem that we did with pi. So the concept is embedded, and it makes it a lot easier to understand everything else later on.
Having you explain that, you would think that you've spent your entire life studying mathematics and academics, but that wasn't always the case, was it? Let's go back before the 2002 incident and talk about who you were then.
Yeah, literally, I spent my life just goofing off, chasing girls, partying, going out to bars, and just goofing off. I mean, I hated math. I remember talking about math to people and literally saying, how does that apply in the real world? It's meaningless. And I look back at it and I just can't believe that I thought that. It's almost like it's a completely different person, It definitely feels like having two separate lives, for sure. I cheated in high school. I had a friend that sat next to me that literally did all of my homework. I can't believe it. When I look back at it, it's just amazing that I even made it through.
And now you're looking at incorporating intricate mathematical ideas into curriculum. Talk a little bit
Right.
about how that transformation happened. And if you wouldn't mind, talk a little bit about that incident that happened in 2002 that essentially changed who Jason Paget is.
Right. I was attacked coming out of a karaoke bar. I'm in Tacoma, Washington. I didn't see him coming at me at all. There was two guys that had been in. I was singing karaoke. I went to pick up a friend of mine, her and a guy that she was on a date with. They had been drinking and they needed a ride. And so I went there. I wound up singing a song. Had a Coke, paid for it, and we left. And there was two guys that were singing there also. And as we walked out of the bar, they ran up behind me. The girl, Angela, saw it, and she said the guy literally was at a full run and just smashed me in the back of the head. And then they both just were started pummeling me, kicking me, punching me. And from my perspective, I was just walking, and I saw, like that flash that people talk about when they get knocked out. It was just like a little poof of light. And the next thing I knew, I was on my knees trying to figure out what happened, why I was getting hit from all these different directions. You know, it was completely disorientating because I was definitely unconscious, like from being hit to my knees, so only a fraction of a second, but it was, everything was spinning and twirling. And I remember thinking I was being attacked by like a gang of people because I was getting hit so many times. And then I remember having this feeling of I'm going to die right now for sure. And then that fight or flight thing took over, and I just had this thought of I wanted to do damage before I died. And I grabbed one of the guys, and I bit him on the inside of his leg. It was just dirty. And anyway, the other guy just started kicking me as I was biting him. And finally, after like maybe 30 to 40 seconds of fighting, he said, "Give me your goddamn jacket." And I was wearing this little cheap Wilson's $99 jacket, and it was all torn up by then too. And I rolled off of his friend that I was biting and threw my jacket on the ground and just jumped away, and they grabbed the jacket and took off. And it turned out that they knew the girls that worked there, and they would see who got paid, you know, who paid with cash, and you'd get mugged leaving the place. I caught them. It took me like a week, but I caught the guys.
Yeah. Did you get your jacket back?
What's funny is I never got the jacket back, but it wouldn't have mattered because the pocket was all torn. But it was, catching them was just, even though they never really, nothing ever really happened to them, they went to jail at least for a little while, you know, for mm-hmm. a few days. And it was very rewarding for me because it was just so violent and just so, it's just something you don't expect. And you just feel like, I don't even know how to describe it. You just feel horrible afterwards. Betrayed. There you go. You know, because all these people watched it. You know, nobody helped.
And then how long was it after the attack that you realized that something had changed?
Yeah, I mean, I noticed that night coming home from the hospital that everything was very different and looked very strange. But I thought it was the pain medicine, you know, and the fact of just, you know, being hit, you know, being out of it. But the next day I knew for sure you know, something was radically different because things don't look smooth. They look like little tiny, like snapshots, but not like fully apart. It's like, it's just, it makes everything has this jitteriness to it. It's like, you ever seen those old flip books where you flip the books and you can see the individual picture frames?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like that, but a little bit faster. It's not so dramatic, but it's enough that it takes away the curve to everything. Like clouds don't look like these smooth little rolling things that they used to. They have these tiny little straight tangent lines around the edge. And what that does mathematically, it turns out, is just amazing. As time went by and I started really thinking about what I was seeing, everything kind of had this slight pixelated quality to it. And so I started mentally just overlaying like a piece of graph paper, like a grid, across my field of view. And I found as long as I made that grid small enough, like with a resolution on a TV where the pixels get smaller, that all the motions of everything across my field of view would line up with a vertex point, you know, where the lines cross on the grid. And later on, of course, I found out that that's what calculus is literally slicing things up into these little integrals. And the smaller those little slices get, the more accurate the measurements get. And so by seeing things that way, I started, you know, saying, can I slice things infinitely tiny? And then I started, you know, can time be sliced infinitely tiny? And it turns out all these questions are the same thing that calculus is really trying to deal with, but it can't fully. And anyway, and it turns out pi, the way that I'm drawing it, kind of allows us to do, very likely allows us to do something that I couldn't do in calculus, which would be like take an exact angle.
Is this something that you can turn on and turn off, or is this something that is constantly with you every day throughout
constant.
The day?
It is constant. And I mean, there's definitely downsides to it. Like all my muscles tremble. I get these, you know, sometimes it just feels, they vibrate. Like your arm feels like the muscle's like a string that's been plucked. And sometimes it's the larger, like high, low frequency, but high, you know, twitchiness, you know, so where you can see it twitch, but it just does it a little bit, but it happens throughout my body constantly. I get these horrible migraines that are, when they come, they put me completely out for anywhere between 24 and 48 hours. But at the same time, the good's so much better, you know, because it's impossible to be bored. Literally, I can just sit someplace and if there's nothing to do, just start looking at things and thinking about it. and you can literally think forever and always find something new, you know.
You talk a little bit about how the attack opened up areas of your brain that you didn't know existed. Talk a little bit about that, and do you think that everybody has areas of their brain that hold this vast knowledge and these vast ideas, and can we tap into that?
Yes, we can. I just was in a Scientific American article a couple months ago, and it was about that, how they're designing an implant that's going to be able to mimic Savant syndrome for everybody, so that you could, you know, literally get an upgrade. And the way that I always try to describe it is, like, geometry is literally math, and so only geometry is the naturally occurring form of math. So, like, the x squared, if you graph it, it makes this little U-shaped parabola. But the parabola in the real world, that parabolic curve when you throw a ball in the air, that geometry is what's real, not the equation. And so, like, if I'm describing the velocity and acceleration of an object in calculus, you know, we do these equations and they're, you know, and the rate that it changes, you know, gives us this velocity, and the rate the velocity changes gives us acceleration. But when you look at how it works geometrically and the equation, it's literally the exact same thing. And so when somebody throws you a ball and you catch it, you're comparing, you know, those little picture frames and how fast the ball is changing its position in each one of those picture frames, you know. And when you catch the ball, your brain's calculated, like, the X, Y, Z coordinates plus time. So it's four-dimensionally calculating, you know, where your hand has to be at the correct time, how long it takes the signal to get from your brain to your fingers. So, and if you did an equation to describe that, it's a serious, you know, equation to have to do, yet you just catch the ball. So our brains are doing all of this just geometrically, but still it's calculus. And it's high-level math constantly that we're all doing. And then at the same time, our bodies are, you know, making our heart beat and breathing, and, you know, every cell is like a galaxy. So no matter what it is that exists, it's math, you know, which, again, is geometry. So
do you feel like you're now using more of your brain, and do you feel like there is still sections left untapped in your own brain, in your own mind?
Yeah, I think in all of us, for sure, because this would exist in everything. We have the ability to be, you know, have incredible memory, you know, and to remember every single thing ever done, you know, and there are people who have that ability. It's just learning how the brain functions. And what they're doing is something called functional MRIs. I had that done in Sweden, and a functional MRI actually maps thought. It shows how much oxygen your brain is using and where. So, for instance, like, if you start writing with a pencil while you're inside the machine, the area of your brain that controls writing starts to work harder because you're writing. And by working harder, it uses more oxygen. And that lights up in the machine because it's very sensitive to these oxygen levels. And they can say, aha, that's what is controlling writing. So they put me in the fMRI, and they would flash up, you know, hundreds of pictures. And every once in a while, an equation would pop up. And they'd see what areas of my brain start to work, and then compare it to control subjects. And they found that the area of my brain, the two different areas that light up is the part that does mathematics and the part that analyzes geometry. So they're working in conjunction instead of just being that part of the brain that controls math.
How do you encourage people to wake up areas of their brain that their whole life they haven't had access to?
I mean, I don't know if you can just make them wake up to it without some sort of, you know, implant, but you can certainly make them exercise it. And by doing that, by learning something new, you're making literally millions of new connections in your brain. And the more, you know, connections you have in that neural net, you know, the more you can think, and the more you're able to analyze things and whatever it is that you're practicing at, which is why, you know, we get better. But one of the things that's very, very hard for people, especially if you're not a kid, is to learn new things. When you get older, it's harder to learn new things. And just that, like, my way of doing it, because I had no traditional math skills when this happened, all the terms that I had to come up with to describe, you know, how pi worked or how relativity worked were all layman terms. So that literally, you know, 99% of everybody within 5 minutes can understand where pi comes from, how it works, why the numbers do what they do, or like how, like when they say, what's the last digit of pi? that's not even the right question to ask. Literally, it's like, because the value of the circumference divided by its diameter changes each time you add a new side. You get a completely new answer. So anyway, I won't go into that. But it's just we can teach it to everybody. And if they're not awakening the part of their brain, they're at least exercising the part that they didn't, which in effect, I guess, is kind of awakening it because you're getting better at it. I would say when it comes to, like, you know, savant syndrome, they are going to be able to induce that someday for sure. This question is how long will it be?
And in terms of the savant syndrome, you're what's called an acquired savant. It's a very unique case, isn't that correct? You're one of the only people to ever have this mathematical gift.
Yeah. I mean, it's the whole thing to me is just amazing. It's and the way it's turned out, I feel very, very lucky because most people who have any type of brain injury, it winds up it's all bad.
You're telling me you wouldn't go back to the jock?
I wouldn't. I would not. You know, I look at it now, and even though I remember it was fun, it just was just very shallow. You know, and things that I thought I could never understand, I can. And if I can, I think everybody can. You know, I think if this would happen to anybody, you just can't help but follow it, you know, where it goes, because it's so amazing. And it really is easy. You know, like what I think Einstein would always say, you know, simplicity, everything starts off super simple. And It seems like everything that I'm doing starts off that way, very simple, and then it gets more complex. But since it's so simple to start out, and I have to use regular terms to describe it, it's much easier, you know, for everybody to understand. Like, if you try to describe pi correctly, you'd need to, for sure, be using, you know, at least calculus and limits to be able to describe it. And whereas we can draw a picture, again, and anybody can get it. Fourth graders on up could get it. If you can multiply, you can completely understand where pi comes from.
This is something that I found very fascinating about your story, is when you look at water coming out of a faucet, you see it in crystalline patterns. Can you talk about that a little bit?
It is. It's awesome. It's like where those wave crests go up. Each one of those little crests is like a tangent line. And the way that it spirals down the sink, it looks like these rotating, spiraling, getting shorter tangent lines that can all be described with like the Pythagorean theorem recursively. It's like saying, you know, a squared plus b squared equals c squared. The way it works, it's like a squared plus b squared equals c squared. Then you re-input c as a, and then, like, say, for instance, b always equals 1. And if you do this where you put the answer back into the equation and you do it constantly, you get a spiral. And how you change those numbers makes the spiral, you know, tighter or longer. But it's all a form of that real simple equation. It's just a recursive form of that equation. But it's real easy to see because of this picture-like quality. You know, again, the water doesn't look smooth anymore. It's very, very obvious now to see those little tangents and how they crisscross over each other identically to pi.